A very good Friday. Welcome to this edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Coming up in the show here today, we'll bring you feature agricultural news reports, and then we'll check in with national and regional agricultural news headlines as well. And we get started with regional agricultural news right after this.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
California regulators have approved new rules requiring all medium and heavy-duty vehicles sold in a state in 2036 to be zero emission. This is after the California Air Resources Board adopted reduced emission regulations for locomotives. With these new actions requiring all new heavy-duty truck sales to be zero emission and tackling train pollution in the state, they're one step closer to achieving healthier neighborhoods and cleaner air for all Californians, that according to Governor Gavin Newsom. The rule also requires transitioning existing fleets to zero emission vehicles. Big rigs, local delivery, and government fleets must transition to zero emission by 2035, garbage trucks and local buses by the year 2039, and sleeper cab tractors and specialty vehicles by the year 2042. The board estimates a reduced pollution from the truck rules would result in $26.6 billion in health savings from fewer asthma attacks, emergency room visits, and respiratory illnesses, and save $48 billion in trucking operating costs. American Trucking Association's Chief Executive Director Chris Spear criticized the decision to force motor carriers to purchase zero-emission vehicles. He says California is setting unrealistic targets and unachievable timelines that will undoubtedly lead to higher prices for the goods and services delivered to the state and fewer options for consumers. Ian LeMay, president of the California Fresh Fruit Association, will become president and CEO of the California Table Grape Commission in the spring of 2025. LeMay will succeed Kathleen Knave, who has served as the lead staff role since January of 1999 when she succeeded Bruce Obenick. Knave joined the commission in 1987 and plans to retire in the spring of 2025. Knave says the California Table Grape Commission has a history of choosing its president and CEO carefully and then allowing time for the incoming leader to transition into the role. In its 55-year history, there have been only three commission presidents, two of whom have served for over 25 years. Have you seen a new or unusual plant or pest in your area? If so, you can play an important role in protecting California agriculture and your environment by reporting a sighting of a plant or pest that you suspect may be a new invasive species in your area. If possible, take photographs of the plant or pest. Including something of commonly known size in a photo for comparison is helpful. Taking photos of the immediate environment where the sighting occurred and key landmarks for finding a site is also often helpful. Photos can be attached to the report, a pest site form either electronically or in hard copy. If you wish to collect a specimen to assist with identification, it is important to keep the specimen secure to avoid the spread of the collected species or any organism that may be attached to it. Please keep a record with the specimen of the location and date that it was collected. Contact your local county agriculture department and inform them that you wish to report a pest sighting, or complete the CDFA Report a Pest Sighting form online and submit by email to the CDFA Pest Hotline. You can also call the CDFA Pest Hotline, or you can download and complete the CDFA Report a Pest Sighting form and mail it to the address provided on the form. Please note that sending specimens by mail is not recommended. Contact your local county agriculture department for instructions before doing so. The CDFA Report a Pest Sighting form can be downloaded and completed for use as a prep tool when contacting your local county agriculture department or when calling the CDFA Pest Hotline. The form provides you with a type of questions you may be asked by your local county agriculture department or by the CDFA hotline operator. And speaking of the CDFA, CDFA Undersecretary Christine Birdsong recently met with Chilean Ambassador Juan Gabriel Valdez, The discussion focused on opportunities to further collaborate on agricultural trade, climate smart agriculture, and issues related to drought and wildfires. California and Chile share a strong agricultural partnership through the University of California Davis, Chile Life Sciences Innovation Center, according to the agency. Guardian Agriculture recently announced it has received approval from the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration to operate its aircraft nationwide. FAA approval makes Guardian Agriculture the first commercially authorized electric vertical takeoff and landing in the U.S., allowing Guardian Agriculture to safely operate its systems across the country. Guardian Agriculture founder and CEO Adam Berkou says that FAA approval represents an important turning point for American leadership in a fast-growing market. Commercial farmers are rapidly moving away from ground spraying equipment in favor of unmanned autonomous systems. However, the majority of systems available today are too small to provide growers with full field coverage at a competitive price point. The Guardian SC1 platform, which already has more than $100 million in customer orders, is the only autonomous electric aerial crop protection system designed specifically for large-scale agriculture. Guardian Agriculture will begin commercial operations in support of its Wilbur Ellis customer in California in the coming months as it continues to ramp up its production capacity. There are strong supplies of avocados in a marketplace right now, with today being Cinco de Mayo. It is a notable high avocado consumption day. There are excellent supplies of avocados coming from Mexico, according to Calavo Growers Incorporated's Peter Shore. Meanwhile, the California season is just starting, with promotable volumes projected now through July. California season has been slow to start with all of the rain and the cooler temperatures this winter and spring, according to Shore. At the same time, both Colombia and Peru are also shipping light volumes of avocados to the U.S. market. Back in Mexico, the season out of Jalisco will begin in early May. All of this means things look very different than they did this time last year. In 2022, avocados at this time had limited supplies and high prices, while to date, 2023 has so far had steady and ample supplies with consistent pricing. As for demand, given a holiday ahead in early May, there is already strong continuous demand with good Cinco de Mayo promotions in place. Pricing on avocados has been very steady this year, according to Shore. Looking ahead, they will continue to see an excellent harvest of avocados in Mexico, and California will be increasing harvest over the coming months with peak volumes in May, June, and July, and they will have California avocados until September.
Climate change is impacting all facets of agriculture, including where it all begins, with breeding. Chris Owens is the lead plant breeder for International Fruit Genetics, which is the largest table grape breeder in the world. He talks to us about some of the challenges they face breeding grape and cherry varieties that are able to overcome the multitude of issues related to climate change.
Well, it has a pretty direct impact on us because the crops that we work with are they're woody plants, and they take a fairly long time to breed compared to, say, like an agronomic crop like corn or soybeans. And so the decisions we make today on the direction of the breeding program, we really need to be thinking many, many years into the future, you know, at least 10, but more like 20 years into the future. And, you know, all the climate models are showing that we're going to be dealing with a warming planet for the next few decades. And so we have to think about that and try to do what we can now to design varieties that can thrive in that environment, you know, 15, 20 years from now. So it's something that's, you know, front of mind just because of the long-term horizon for the projects that we have.
While IFG is well known for their grapes, they also produce high-quality cherries. IFG is currently developing cherries that have a lower chilling requirement compared to traditional varieties. The low-chilled cherries are being bred in part to expand cherry production into non-traditional areas, but also to combat the atypical warming being caused by climate change.
Yeah, our cherry program is unique in that we're really trying to push the envelope in developing cherries that have a very low chilling requirement. Most of your traditional cherry producing areas are in fairly temperate regions of the world where they have a lot of cold weather in the winter. So they're typically a temperate plant where the buds will stay dormant until they have a certain number of hours of cold temperature. There's usually like an ideal window where it's cold, but not below freezing. And it's a sort of a protection mechanism for the plant, so they don't push buds too early in the springtime when there's still a danger of a frost. But we are based in the southern portion of the Central Valley of California, where the winters are pretty mild. And There are cherries grown traditionally around here, this part of the valley, but it's a pretty small, and it's probably more on the fringe of where you can grow cherries. And so we're trying to develop new varieties that have very low chilling requirement. The long term, ideally, we try to get to the point where they don't have any at all. So that's sort of like the main objective of our program is to combine low chill with really high fruit quality. Then there's a whole list of other characteristics that are important as well, but that's kind of the main areas. And so global warming sort of ties into that in a few ways, in that not only are temperatures rising in the summertime, they're also rising in the wintertime in a lot of areas. So in some places where there used to be sufficient chilling to grow a cherry tree, there might not be anymore, or there might not be in certain years. And so developing low chill varieties actually is a good solution for, you know, a global warming, because it allows you more flexibility on where you can plant your cherries. One of our initial reasons for starting the program was honestly to move into more novel areas where cherries aren't traditionally grown, but it also has the side benefit of, you know, they would also be appropriate in, you know, a kind of a global warming type of environment. And then it's also where we have our program. It's also very hot in the summertime. And so it's, you know, it's actually the cherries, most cherry varieties don't enjoy the extreme heat that we have here. And so at the same time, we get to also be selecting for heat tolerance, which will also be important if people are trying to grow cherries in the future. And even in more traditional places like, you know, the eastern part of Washington is a big cherry producing area. They've had a lot of issues with excessive heat the last few seasons as well. So it's not just us here in a more non-traditional area. It's also an issue in our primary cherry producing regions.
On the grape front, IFG is seeking to breed grapes that are able to withstand not only warmer climates, but also extreme weather events such as high temperature spikes and abnormally heavy rainfall. Additionally, Owen said one of IFG's broader goals is to reduce the amount of inputs needed in their grape breeding program.
Yeah, so for our grape program, we are also trying to develop varieties that can withstand warmer environments. And what we're seeing is it's not just rising temperatures, but also there's more extreme events. So that could be a temperature spike, which, you know, it also can be like a heat stress type of event. But we're also seeing more rainfall in unexpected times. So a lot of the grape producing areas, traditional areas, they're generally drier areas where you don't get a whole lot of rain in the summertime. Generally rainfall on the fruit, depending on the timing and the amount, can lead to cracking of the fruit in the field. And so they're generally grown places where you don't have a lot of summer rainfall. But that's changing. So we're seeing unusual rain patterns, not all the time and not everywhere, but in certain regions, certain places, people are getting more rain than they normally would. So, kind of a combination of unexpected rainfall, more humid conditions, makes us try to develop both varieties that can withstand some rain, so they're crack tolerant, but also makes disease resistance more important. So more rain, more humidity leads to more fungal pathogens. And so, we have an objective to also develop resistance to some of the more important fungal diseases of grapes. And, sort of along with that, it's not necessarily all entirely directly related to global warming, but just sort of like another Earth Day initiative. It's another, related objective is just to try to reduce inputs into our grape breeding program. So reduce pesticide applications in grapevines, in table grapes in particular, there's a lot of growth regulators that get applied. So trying to reduce the number of growth regulators that need to be used. Trying to reduce the amount of fuel people need by driving tractors through all the time. I mean, these are all sort of long-term goals to try to reduce the carbon footprint and the chemical footprint really of what people are doing. But that's definitely something that we think about in what we're trying to do.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
The U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol has announced that enrollment for the 2023 crop year is open now through September 1st, providing growers the opportunity to complete data entry prior to harvest. The updated timing also better aligns with peak cotton marketing dates and allows the member's cotton to be verified and visible as protocol cotton bales right after ginning. The timing will also provide growers who are members of the program with additional benefits, including more timely insights that can be implemented into management plans as they work towards continuous improvement from pre-planting to post-harvest activities. The protocol is a voluntary farm-level science-based sustainability program that is setting a new standard for delivering value to all stakeholders across the entire supply chain, from farms to finished products. The program's mission is to bring quantifiable and verifiable goals and key to the sustainability measurement metrics of U.S. cotton production. To complete enrollment data and learn more about the protocol, go to trustuscotton.org. E15 sales will continue this summer as the Biden administration granted a waiver on Friday to a Clean Air Act provision that shuts off those sales starting on June 1st for summer ozone concerns. The EPA cited ongoing market supply issues created by Russia's unprovoked war in Ukraine for reasons to issue the emergency waiver. The waiver will protect Americans from fuel supply crisis by reducing our reliance on imported fossil fuels, building U.S. energy independence, and supporting American agriculture and manufacturing, according to the agency in a news release. Current estimates indicate that on average, E15 is about 25 cents a gallon cheaper than E10. The EPA was running up against a hard May 1st deadline for terminals to be able to continue selling E15 to retailers. The agency said the waiver would remain in effect until May 20th, which is the maximum period allowed by law. A USDA official is clearing up some misinformation about USDA's program on financial assistance for producers who have in the past been discriminated against in USDA lending programs. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
The Inflation Reduction Act has over $2 billion for what is called Section 22007, a program of financial assistance for farmers who in the past may have been discriminated against in USDA lending programs.
We are aware that there are some lawyers and groups that have been sharing some information about the 22007 program, pressuring people to sign retainer agreements and asking people to fill out forms.
Deputy Undersecretary of Agriculture Gloria Montano Green says all of that is premature, if not downright misleading. She told us that as of right now,
the program has not started. The application filing period has not begun. The application is going to be free. It's not requiring a lawyer to file an application for this assistance.
And there will be some help available in the application process when it does start. She says for the latest official news on the program, go to farmers.gov/22007. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
New data from USDA's Economic Research Service shows farm sector debt tied to real estate is expected to be at a record high of $375.9 billion in 2023. Farm sector real estate debt has been increasing continuously since 2009 and is expected to reach an amount that is 87.5% higher in 2023 compared with 2009 in inflation-adjusted dollars. Real estate debt now far outpaces debt that is not secured by a mortgage. Historically, real estate debt and non-real estate debt have trended similarly, but they have diverged in recent years. Non-real estate debt showed an 11.9% year-over-year increase in 2014 in inflation-adjusted dollars, but declined after 2017. Meanwhile, there's been a continuous increase in real estate debt since 2009. In 2023, real estate debt is expected to be 33% higher than the 10-year average, while non-real estate debt is expected to be 10.2% lower than the 10-year average. It's not a new problem, but it's one that hasn't gone away since the pandemic kept many Farm Service Agency staffers at home. Minnesota Congressman and farmer Brad Finstad responded to complaints by some producers at a general farm commodities hearing on the farm bill.
You know, it hurts my heart a little bit to hear the shortage of staff on the FSA side. The USDA has 100,000 employees. I think we have a prioritizing problem, not maybe a staff shortage.
USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack is asking for 4,700 new employees in his FY24 budget, but strongly defended the FSA at a hearing last month when confronted with a similar staffing criticism, saying that there were 6,500 fewer people working for the department than when he came back. Farm leaders told a House Ag panel that the next farm bill must update reference prices and protect or even improve crop insurance. USA Rice Chairman Kirk Statterfield credited the House Ag Committee for seeking higher farm bill funding baseline needed to update the support trigger.
The cost of production being so much higher than 2012, it's just a completely different world that we live in now as far as pricing and input costs, and it really needs to be relevant for the PLC to work.
Others called for more support for buy-in crop insurance, more research dollars, and a move away from ad hoc disaster aid that's added $70 billion above farm bill costs over 6 years. The Farm Credit Council wants the next farm bill to invest in the future of rural communities. Skylar Souter, Farm Credit Council Vice President of Government Affairs, says it's all about essential community facilities.
To attract a vibrant workforce and make rural America a great place to live, we have to have these essential community facilities. So one thing we'd like to see in the Farm Bill is a codification of our ability to invest in important rural community facilities like rural hospitals, critical care clinics, even things that are really important like daycares or fire stations.
Farm Credit organized the Rebuild Rural Coalition of more than 250 farm and rural groups to advocate for the unique infrastructure needs of rural communities and agriculture.
This is really a cool program because it brings together Farm Credit, local leaders, other community banks and credit unions, and there's also a piece for the federal government to play as well through the Community Facilities Direct Loan and Loan Guarantee Program. So it really is bringing everybody together to further these initiatives in rural America.
Skylar Souter, Farm Credit Council Vice President of Government Affairs.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.